This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The best bits of Joy Drive with Em and Warren. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Transgender athletes have been competing in elite sport since at least 1976, when Renee Richards competed at the US Open, and have been competing openly in the Olympics since 2004. But in the past few years, the media scrutiny of trans athletes has intensified into a hurtful public debate. And worse still, trans people and medical professionals are often being left out of the conversation as the issue becomes more politicised. And here to tell us more about how and why we need to put an end to this is Holly Thorpe, Professor of Sociology of Sport and Physical Culture at Waikato University in New Zealand, joining us from New Zealand. Holly, welcome to Joy Drive.
Kia ora, thanks for having me on.
It's lovely to have you here. Holly, can you start by telling us about your research? What did you look into and what did you find?
Yes, this is a collaborative project with Dr. Jamie Veal, who's a transgender health expert at the University of Waikato, and two PhD students that we're working with. And basically, we were really trying to understand the role of the media in framing what's become, like you say, a real bit of a media frenzy around the topic of transgender participation in sport. And so we really focused on the case study of Laurel Hubbard last year around the Tokyo Olympic Games. So she was the first openly transgender athlete to compete in an individual sport at the Olympic level, and a New Zealander that we're proud of. So, and you know, she's an incredible athlete. But what happened and what we saw is, as soon as it was announced that she was going to be included in the New Zealand team, and in the lead up to the Olympics and during the Olympics, there was this huge kind of media frenzy. And we analysed over 620 articles over three different phases, so before, during, and after the Olympics. And we were trying to understand sort of the way the media was framing her participation in each of those periods. And we were focused on looking at the language that was being used, journalist sourcing practices, the tone, even things like image selection. And what we found is that the subtle and then the not so subtle ways that the journalists were letting their opinions shape their pieces. And we found overwhelmingly this topic was framed up very much as a debate. So, you know, journalists were kind of using the idea of objectivity. They could frame it up on, you know, sources on this side versus sources on this side, which really, it doesn't really encourage a more nuanced and ethical and empathetic response when readers feel like they have to take a side on this very polarizing debate. So, it might seem like journalistic objectivity, but in fact, that's journalist sort of bias that's playing a role in how this has been framed up.
Holly, did you find in your research that trans voices themselves were being excluded from these conversations when it came to, you know, media reporting?
Yeah, often journalists would try to make sure they had a transgender voice, but it wasn't always dealt with, with the care and respect that it deserved. Often it wasn't, it was just sort of seen as one source on one side of this debate. And, that we need to actually question that, because those voices should be centralized. And if we think about and look at, and which we did, was how Laurel's voice was included. Often it was just, there'd be quotes from previous media articles that she'd done, often quite a long time ago. And, these stories were very rarely centered around her own experiences or her voice as the leading voice on this. Often not a lot of respect when the transgender voice was included.
Holly, can you explain for those who don't understand what dead naming is and why it's still a problem in the media when it comes to sport?
Yeah, so dead naming is using a person's pre-transitional name, which is obviously not very respectful of the decisions that they've made in their life. And so that's quite a harmful practice. And we've got, there's a number of media guides out there, whether it's from, LGBTQI media organizations that have put out these guides like Athlete Ally or GLAAD or the Trans Journalists Association, which, tells journalists about proper pronoun usage and how to, deal with these topics with care. And yet so many journalists were just moving too fast and not really, you know, putting in the time and effort to learn and to find ways to write that are respectful.
We're chatting with Professor Holly Thorpe about the way that media coverage has been sensationalized about transgender athletes and why that should end. Speaking of, what would you like to see happen to change the way in which transgender athletes are being reported on and about?
Well, I think journalists can, and we did see, you know, a small, you know, basically just over a handful of the journalists were adopting more ethical and responsible approaches to this. And we interviewed a number of those, and we sort of tried to hear more about their learning journey to being able to report on this and ways that are more ethical and human rights oriented. And when we spoke with them, we heard about their real learning journeys. Often that was in close consultation with LGBTQI communities, you know, really listening to and respecting the transgender voices, recognizing that when they're writing on this topic, it's not just any old story, right? Actually, their stories can do harm, and that, you know, the transgender community are often a vulnerable and often marginalized group. And when they bring in transgender sources, often they can cop a lot of abuse, even death threats at times when they're included. So real care needs to be taken when writing on these stories. And so we need our journalists to really be thinking about do no harm, and actually how do you minimize harm in your writing? How do you educate audiences towards more, you know, ethical and empathetic respondings to this rather than knee-jerk reactions? And, you know, working with LGBTQI communities to educate themselves, talking amongst themselves. Some of the journalists that we spoke to talked about working with their editors and with their media organizations to turn off the comments on their articles. And, you know, they get lots of clicks and, you know, obviously advertising, so there's financial benefits to have the comments open. But in fact, that's where a lot of hate speech and a lot of harm is coming through in the comment sections. So there's small things that journalists and reporters can be doing to try to write on this topic in a way that doesn't exacerbate harm to already vulnerable and often quite marginalized groups.
Holly, I'm just wondering, have you noticed that there's a difference in the journalistic standards and writing between, say, public broadcasters and commercial broadcasters, or is it just the same across the board?
Yeah, I think there's, I wouldn't make comment on the two different types of media there, but yeah, I think there were definitely differences in journalists' approaches. Those who took, you know, longer form pieces, they didn't just try to crank it out in a day. They took time to really think through what they were trying to communicate, really worked hard to get quality sources, really trying to, you know, work hard to make sure when they bring transgender voices in that they're looking after their transgender sources. So we did see, you know, quite remarkable differences across journalists, but I wouldn't necessarily comment on different types of media there, probably.
And as we mentioned in the introduction, you know, we've had transgender people competing in elite sport, you know, since the 1970s. Mm. So is it just in the last couple of years that things have deteriorated in terms of journalistic, you know, writing, or is it been this like this all along, but there's just been less articles written?
Well, I think we're in a moment where there is, you know, there's so many different sources of media all around us. And we've also got social media too, which is, you know, it feels like we're getting shouted at times from all directions. And I think the media landscape has changed over time. So what we've really seen here is that, you know, we need to ask ourselves who's been considered an expert on this subject. And often some of the journalists were going to some pretty questionable sources in terms of who they'd consider experts to comment on such a story. And, you know, even at times they would put, you know, this topic up for public polling, as if everyday public should have a say on the, you know, the opportunities for transgender people in sport. And that's really, you know, really kind of, we need to question whether that's the way that, media outlets should create space for those types of things, which can be very harmful if the public overwhelmingly say no, they shouldn't have a space in sport. I mean, you know, those types of decisions are definitely very questionable.
Holly, what are you hoping that comes from the research that you've told us about this afternoon?
Yeah, well, some of the journalists that we spoke to talked about the Laurel Hubbard case as being a really teachable moment, a time of a lot of learning in newsrooms where journalists were getting educated and trying to learn more about how to do. Often it was that they didn't know that they shouldn't, you know, dead name, and they didn't know that they should do this or that. So a lot of journalists learned quite a lot during this time. So hopefully that keeps going. They keep learning, they go to the good LGBTQI media organizations, and they ask when they don't know, like, what's good practice here? What's ethical practice? And there's an opportunity to move towards more responsible journalism and away from that sort of sensationalistic and polarizing debate.
Absolutely.
Holly, really good to chat with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us on Joy Drive today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Holly Thorpe, Professor of Sociology of Sport and Physical Culture at Waikato University in New Zealand. And if this conversation has raised any concern or affected you negatively, you can find a whole range of support at joy.org.au/support.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.